www.ReviewTheBeatles.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Chris O'Brien, just before we get back to the discussion, I wanted to add something about Candy Jones. Chris, did you ever meet Jim?
Yeah, I did. I actually met him a couple times. The first time was at the MUFON Symposium in 1998 in Denver. And it was quite a treat for me to finally meet that, how would I put it, the court jester of ufology, I think he's been called a number of times over the years. He was just an amazing, engaging guy. It was just fun to talk to him. He didn't talk down to me. He was aware of my work. He actually had given my first book, The Mysterious Valley, a glowing review, which he didn't give that many good reviews, I think, over his last 10 or 15 years. And I was very gratified by that.
One thing you should know, Jim very seldom read a book from cover to cover. So if he gave your book more than the usual attention, you have to really feel proud.
I do, and I still have a copy of Saucer Smear where he gave my book a recommendation, and he also gave my Secrets of the Mysterious Valley a good recommendation as well in 2007. I wished I'd had a chance to spend more face time with him, but I sure enjoyed the number of times that we had him on the show, Gene. He's really going to be missed. It's that kind of twinkle in the eye sort of irreverence that this field sorely needs, and I'm just hoping that we can have someone of his stature step up and kind of take the mantle on of the trickster of ufology.
Okay, I wanted to bring up this thing about Candy Jones, Tim, and that is there was a book that came out some years back called The Control of Candy Jones. Remember that Tim?
Okay. Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Explain to our listeners what that was, because I wanted to give you a reaction that Jim got about it. Go ahead.
Well, I know that Jim didn't believe that the story was true, but
and there was a reason for that, but let's go on.
Well, as I recall, now we've published a lot of material about this episode, but I'm no expert on it. In fact, I don't believe that the subject ever came up of this mind control incident. It was kind of like a Manchurian Candidate thing. She was made into an unwilling, well, what would be the word for it? She took information and spy information and planted things all over the world without knowing what she was doing. There's a name for that, and I can't think. It just slips my at the moment. But apparently she wrote, under hypnosis done by Long John, I might add, or at least in the beginning, she told this story about having been a liaison for the CIA, delivering spy-type information in various places that she traveled.
Okay, now there was also another book called Confessions of a Dangerous Mind about Chuck Barris, the TV gong show host, who also had been some sort of secret agent. Now, Jim told me the story that he probably repeated on the show here, where he talked to Candy Jones' producer, who kind of said, that's just something they made up. That was his reaction, not in words, but in actions, in the way he responded to it. And this was just one of those things. Long John was not above pulling a prank on his show sometimes.
Well, that is true, but I don't think Candy, now, I knew Candy much better than I knew Long John. In fact, I remember one time we both got out of the show. She lived in my neighborhood down around 34th Street. And so there was a blizzard going on outside, and we both had to go home. And since we were going the same direction, we tried to hail a cab. Well, there was no cab stopping for us. So we both simultaneously grabbed onto the back door handle of a cab that was going about its way and slid down Broadway a little bit until they stopped and did let us in. But I knew Candy fairly well, and she was not like Long John as far as that goes. So I don't see why she would make up an entire story like that. But like I said, I was not privy to really information on that, and I never really questioned her. But just to finish the story about this EVP of her mother, I don't believe that was a hoax because it had nothing to do with Long John. He was deceased when this happened. I remember that Jim was taken somewhat aback by that because, as you mentioned, he seemed to be an atheist, but not a pushy one. you know, he wasn't, didn't try to force his views down your throat on it or anything, you know. He seemed to be a little bit disturbed by that or perplexed because he realized that there seemed to be something to it. There was no way that voice could have gotten on that tape that we know of. Candy wasn't hoaxing it. She just wasn't the type of person to do that. Long John, yes, we know he did, but Candy, no, I would say not. If she said that voice was on the tape, it was on the tape.
I'm getting a low battery signal on my phone, so before it cuts me off, because it gives me like four before it cuts off, I wanted to bring one thing up, and Gene can sort of carry it from there, which is why I think that the ufologists and the phenomena that they look into or investigate, depending on how you look at it, interact and are part of the same framework, which was the Wanaku, New Jersey case. And I'll just say very quickly that, and Gene can comment on it after I get off the phone, but we discussed this in advance. And my source was Gene Steinberg, who happens to be hosting the show, so he can certainly carry it on.
Or just simply say I made it all up and Alan didn't know that until now.
Did you?
I don't know.
No, you did not. Essentially, what you told me at the time, and it was immediate time, it was pretty deadpan, so you're not noted for, unlike Jim, and unlike Gray, you're not noted for deadpan when you're kidding. You're kind of goofy like me, but apparently one evening you and Jim were sitting together, and Jim was, as usual, getting a little drunker and drunker and decided to make a random hoax phone call, and it happened to be to the Wanaku, New Jersey Police Department, saying that he'd seen a UFO over the Wanaku Reservoir. Jim, on a Paracast, actually said he had no memory of this whatsoever, but Gene and I both said that we distinctly remember this was the way that it happened, because after that, there was a genuine UFO flap.
Right.
Whatever that may mean. I had similar experiences, not as a hoax, but I would hold, when such things were possible in a much smaller Atlanta in those days, citywide sky watches, which I would advertise in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and there were invariably not just a lot of phone calls, but some really good sightings, and I reached the conclusion that there was this interaction between interest, UFOs, ufologists, and sightings, and that was a really spooky story. I'll stay on until the phone checks out, but say goodbye because I don't know when it, you know, just will turn me off, and listen in as long as I can. Fascinating discussion, and I miss Jim a lot. He taught me to laugh in terms of strange phenomena, and I've never lost that ability to take it seriously, but also to take it with a grain of salt, even my own ideas.
Thank you, my friend Alan Greenfield. Let's continue. Bob Zanotti, you were doing this radio show called Coffee Clutch in the 60s. How did you get acquainted with Jim Moseley?
Well, it was an interesting time for everyone getting interested in flying saucers. I remember growing up in Hawthorne, New Jersey, about 57 or something, this kid picked up Max B. Miller's magazine about flying saucers.
It was called Saucers, one word.
Yeah, I was just, the title escaped me, but whatever it was, Max B. Miller. And I started reading and I saw names in there. I think there were pictures from August C. Roberts, and I really got going on this. And that was the time, of course, when the UFOs were really big and were making their great debut in the modern times. And a bit of a ham radio story here. I've been a radio ham for many, many years. And a friend of mine, who actually himself went into broadcasting, a school buddy of mine, hooked up on the ham radio one day with a fellow in Jersey City, New Jersey, by the name of Dominic Lucchesi. Dom was a radio ham. And he said, gee, Bob, you got to talk to this guy. He talks all about flying saucers and everything. Gave me his call letters, and I heard him one night and gave him a shout, and we chatted for a long time. We understood each other quite well, and he said to me, Bob, you got to come over to my place in Jersey City. We have a gathering of some interesting people here all the time.
And I'll tell you what, we'll learn what kind of gathering that was.
Oh, and it was a great one.
It was indeed. Thank you, Bob Zanotti. We'll have more about Jim Owsley, his life and times. You're listening to Gene and Chris and many other people. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, neighbors, you've seen all those crazy, wacky products on TV. The perfect tortilla, easy covers, hot booties, furniture fix, petty spin, and more. Where do you find all that stuff? You go to asseenontv.com because this is the one-stop source for all of these TV goods advertised. Find all your favorites as seen on TV. Check them out asseenontv.com. And by the way, save 10%. Here's what you do. Use the code SEEN1, S-E-E-N number 1, SEEN1. Go to asseenontv.com to order. Save 10%. Purchase this summer's hottest As Seen on TV items. Save 10%. Or call 1-866-277-3366. 1-866-277-3366. The code SEEN1 to save 10%.
Good day. Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources. November 21st, 2012. Gold opened this morning at $1726.80. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1769.50, $884.75 for a half ounce, or $442.37 for a quarter ounce. That's $1769.50, $884.75, and $442.37.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? Wait a sec. Gold and silver is going up while Congress is trying to settle on the next debt increase. And there's no end to this madness. That old 401k and IRA can be converted into physical gold without tax consequences. I explained this in my book, 10 Reasons to Buy Gold. Don't let time slip away. Call for your free copy today, 800-686-2237. Get away from that Washington spin and get honest answers about gold. 800-686-2237. The book is free, 800-686-2237.
If you're considering a water filter, have you heard about AquaPail? AquaPail from FreezeDryGuy.com has huge advantages over many other water filters. American-made AquaPail units are designed and engineered to not just filter contaminated water, but capture or kill all bacteria and viruses to non-detectable levels. AquaPail has the fastest flow rate of any other water filter on the market, filtering a gallon of contaminated water in about 5 minutes. That's water when you need it, now. Get the world's fastest, safest, and most reliable gravity-fed portable water treatment system for surface, well, and wastewater sources. AquaPail. Available in 4 sizes starting at only $100. And all orders to the lower 48 ship free. Call 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. That's 866-404-3663 or freezedryguy.com. 100% veteran-owned. The Freeze Dry Guy.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait. There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com. The world's most dangerous stickers.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We return to the Paracast remembering Jim Moseley, Life and Times. Alan Greenfield has left the building. And he'll have a lot more to say because he'll be back on the Paracast many times, we hope. We were talking to another close friend of Jim Moseley's, Bob Zanotti, who first became acquainted with one of Jim's friends, Dominic Lucchesi, on the ham radio, and then you went to one of their social gatherings. What were your expectations? Just a bunch of people carrying on, or what?
I would equate it, without too much exaggeration, we New Yorkers always exaggerate just a little bit to make a point. I had the same, don't forget, I was this this fuzzy-faced kid, you know, a teenager. You and I were about the same age at the time, Gene. Well, I wasn't scared. I was just so enthusiastic because Dom said, oh, my God, a great crowd of people. And he rattled off a couple of names. Augie Roberts is here and Jim Mosley. And at the time, I didn't connect all of these names. I didn't know them. I never met them. So I made the trek out there to his apartment in Jersey City, was met at the door. He brought me in. And I'll never forget it. Forget the scene. I wasn't the first one there. But Augie Roberts, whom I hadn't really met yet, didn't know him at all, became very, very close friends later on. And then Jim was sitting there. As a matter of fact, speaking of drinking, I think he had a glass of scotch in his hand at the time. Jack Robinson was there at the time. So we had quite a few of the core people of what became known, what Augie Roberts used to refer to all the time as the New York Circle of ufologists. And I was introduced, and we just started to talk, and we started swapping stories about UFOs and the offbeat. And Gene, you know that apartment. You remember that weird photograph, not a photograph, a painting on the wall at Dom's place. It was the painting of a space woman, a rather haunting figure with white hair and almost, you know, haunting, haunting. And I still remember that meeting. This was about 1961. Well, in the meantime, I really got enthusiastic. I had a lot of contact with Augie Roberts, and I met another ham. This guy was a technician down at the radio station WFMU in East Orange, New Jersey, which is the New York metro area. And I went down there. He said, when you got to come and see the station? And I went down. I talked to the program director there and the station manager. I said, yeah, I've got this feeling that I'd like to get into broadcasting. I seem to have a feeling for it, a talent. You know, I admire the Long John show. And, of course, like you, Gene, and you, Tim, I mean, we grew up on Long John Neville. I mean, this was part of our culture.
And it's funny, too, because people these days do not remember Long John. They think of Art Bell as the pioneer paranormal show host, but no, it was Long John first.
Exactly, exactly. Long John was the pioneer. Nobody did it better than Long John. We're going back to the 1950s. It was a clever idea, and he was very big in New York, and I admired Long John. I met him a couple of times. I used to go up to WOR on a Friday night as a student in New York, and we'd chat. I met him, met Gene Shepard a couple of times. And anyway, to get back to the story, I said, you know, I would love to do a program, something like Long John Neville talking about the offbeat. And this, he said, well, as a matter of fact, we've got an opening on Friday nights. Do you want to try it? This was a university station. I said, well, sure, why not? I was 17 years old. I just got my driver's license in the state of New Jersey. And so that's the way it began. And I talked to Augie, and he got excited. He said, oh, this is wonderful, a new show. And, you know, I got lots of people I know. And Augie said, gee, we got to bring Jim Mosley on. Well, Jim turned up. It was a year later, 1962. He came over with Jack Robinson. Eventually, a fellow by the name of Gene Steinberg turned up one evening.
Oh, that was very mysterious. Of course, I wasn't there physically. In the physical realm, I was there in some other kind of dimensional manifestation.
Well, Gene, you became what Long John used to call one of the regulars. We had a core group on Coffee Clutch, and Jim was one of them. And Jack and Augie and you, and then Tim came later. He was on the show, and some others. It was very much an offbeat show. And in fact, I'm very proud. I can tell you this. It got so popular at one point. Believe it or not, the Coffee Clutch show on WFMU was actually listed, in the radio TV section of the New York Times. I really got floored when I saw that. And that's how I got to meet, Jim and you and all the others. And I've been listening very carefully in the previous segments, and I just nodding here. Yeah, that's very much Jim. Now, I just want a little caveat here. The others who have been on the show so far, and those still here, remember Jim for a continuous period, practically until his death. But, of course, my recollection of Jim was very much the 1960s. And I came back a couple of times. I was in Europe already in 67. I knew all about that fabulous convention, and I really regretted not being able to go there. I remember it was a really exciting event. And a couple of times he had a couple of parties. He had wild parties. They were always very wet parties, very wild parties.
Well, not that wild. They were not wild by our current...
Jane,
they were pretty wild.
We're talking the very staid 60s now.
Well, there is that comparison, yes.
Yeah, I mean, for me anyway, as this fuzzy-faced kid, I was very much impressed. And, you were hobnobbing with some really interesting and sometimes very weird people. Jim was great. He was a great host, and he was a funny guy. He had a sense of humor, and he was very unassuming. Someone at the very beginning of the show was talking about his IQ. He was very articulate, very intelligent, very well read. He was also a couple of things I'd like to say about him. In my contact with him, which was very much through the show, and we did a lot of shows together, as you know. I've got stacks of tapes here. And one of them, you mentioned WannaCue. There's an interesting twist to that. Augie Roberts won it, and I went to cover that. In fact, I think I sent you the MP3 of an interview with one of the guards up there who described what he saw. But anyway, getting back to Jim, Jim was very tolerant. I always had the impression he had clear ideas. He had his own philosophy. He used to say it, but he never really declared openly what he thought about it.
He wasn't dogmatic about it.
No. And he
very tolerant.
Some people would be unkind. Some people might be unkind and say he was sitting on the fence all the time. I think Augie Roberts put it this way. Jim will go any way the wind is going, you know. Dom Lucchesi was very similar. To quote Augie, if you go negative, he'll go positive. You go positive, he'll go negative, just to keep things stirred up. One thing with Jim, I want to stress the word tolerance because, you know, I was starting out in my broadcasting career. When I listened to those old shows, they weren't bad for a 17, 18, 19-year-old. And you weren't too bad either, Gene, to tell you the truth. You were very glib and very articulate and a great contributor to that show. And I'm glad to see that you've carried on and followed it professionally, too, just as an aside. But, you know, Jim probably figured, oh, God, this kid, you know, he's obviously imitating Long John. But he never, ever gave me the impression of intolerance. On the contrary, he gave me the impression of being a kind of mentor, helping along. You ask him a question, no matter how seemingly ridiculous, he would answer it. And then if you got to know him a little bit better, I mean, he admitted to pranks and
all that stuff. We'll get into more of that in a moment. We have to do the break. And Geneva wanted to make a few more comments before we see her off, so we'll do that in the next segment. We're talking about the one, the only, the court jester of ufology, Jim Moseley. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code Night Owl. Use the coupon code Night Owl to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, listen carefully. Sweeping changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever eliminate their tax debts once and for all. And now, I can help you reduce or eliminate your tax debts and end your tax nightmare. Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I've helped thousands of people reduce and eliminate tax debts they couldn't pay, and after more than 30 years of experience dealing with the IRS, I can tell you there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. And with the IRS's new policies, it's easier than ever to put your tax debt behind you once and for all. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. Call 800-346-6829. Learn how I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
Being an armed citizen means having a gun with you all the time. Carrying a firearm every day requires a holster that is both concealable and comfortable. Whether you choose our SuperTuck Deluxe or MiniTuck, you'll have the confidence that comes from being discreetly and comfortably armed, prepared to face unforeseen dangers. Crossbreed holsters are handmade in the USA, come with a lifetime warranty, and a 2-week try-it-free guarantee. Order your holster today at crossbreedholsters.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
How would you like to have normal blood pressure?
This is Ernesto from Illinois. I had my doctor's appointment yesterday and I got my labs in. My HDL is 119L and my LDL is 37L. My doctor asked what I was doing to lower it so much, so I told her about HB Extract.
Millions of people, like Ernesto, are suffering from high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, and clogged arteries. But now there's an effective, natural, 100% organic nutritional supplement for a healthy heart and circulation. Heart and Body Extract.
My blood pressure has not gone past 125 over 80 in almost a month.
Experience amazing benefits when your body gets what it needs with the assistance of Heart and Body Extract.
She did a double take when she looked at my ER labs. She couldn't believe it.
Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
Thank you. Heart and Body Extract.
This is Hilly Rose, and I hope that you do listen to the Paracast because you will learn a great deal about the paranormal.
We have an all-star guest list here. My personal friends, friends of Jim Moseley, including Jerome Clark, Geneva Hagen, Tim Beckley, Alan Greenfield, who left us a while back, and Bob Zanotti. Geneva, knowing Jim as well as you did, how did he influence your opinions and expectations about these crazy studies?
About ufology?
Ufology and any of the related things that go on around it.
Well, I suppose he kind of undermined my credulity. I grew up in a family that practiced a lot of Appalachian folk magic, and so I saw a lot of that happen, but so far as UFOs, a green fireball is as much as close as I ever came to a UFO. And the fact that you could hang out with someone like Jim Moseley and never meet one credible UFO contactee certainly kind of kicked the bottom out of that belief. But I do remember one particular spring of 1976 when there was a UFO seance in North Hudson Park, New Jersey.
Oh, I was responsible for that. But go ahead.
Right.
Oh,
give your reaction, Geneva, and then Tim will contribute. Go ahead.
Tim Beckley? Yeah. Tim might want to say more about it. I kind of came in for the pre-seance party, which Jim was hosting at his apartment, and press releases had gone out. It was probably one of the first flash mobs that ever happened. It had been published in the newspaper, which it wasn't supposed to be announced in advance, but it was, and 500 people came out at midnight for this seance of the Freibergs, who were friends of Bud Hopkins, and they were there to de-ghost some houses in Manhattan, and they were supposed to conjure down some UFOs. But with 500 people milling around, being rowdy, selling popcorn and balloons, and eventually when the UFOs didn't show up, they mobbed the Freiburg's car and started rocking it back and forth, and it was starting to look pretty scary, but then a character showed up in the background wearing a silver suit, and everybody went chasing after them, so the Freibergs escaped intact and continued their seance on the roof of the Stonehenge apartment building, which was very cold and windy, so I didn't stay for that part, but perhaps Tim did.
I did. In fact, I have to say that I am responsible for that event. Actually, the Freibergs were not friends of Bud Hopkins. In fact, if anything, the Bud hated this. In fact, that's why for years Bud and Jim did not speak. The Freibergs had hired me to be their publicist. Now, people sometimes get confused because I'm Tim Beckley, Mr. UFO, the ufologist, but I'm also Tim Beckley, the publisher and the promoter. And sometimes there can even be an inner conflict. So anyway, so the Freibergs had hired me to get some attention for them. Warren was a talk show host, a right-wing talk show host out of Chicago, and his wife was Libby, who was a psychic. They never got along off the air. I believe both of them are deceased. Anyway, we did get a notice about this on the front page of the Star Ledger, and it did attract a crowd. There was a naked man with sparklers running through the crowd. There was people selling balloons, and as you mentioned, it was quite an event. People would say, but this is not the presentation you want to make for serious ufology. Well, sometimes ufology is not serious. By the way, who's to say who is serious or what is serious? It's kind of hard to do in this field, as you know. So anyway, Bud and Jim did not talk for a long time because of this. In fact, I don't think they ever talked after that. Peter Robbins is kind of an intermediary, so maybe he got them towards the end there to at least smile at each other. But for many,
I don't
many
think
years,
so. I knew Bud pretty well. Bud did not like him.
No, he did, and that was the core, that was the root of it to some degree, although I think that's kind of silly, to be honest with you. Both gentlemen have passed, and Bud had his, you know, his very positive side as far as I'm concerned, and some negative things, as we all do. And when you think about it, it's a childish event that was meant to celebrate, if that's not the right word, this incident that took place where little aliens came out with shovels and put soil into buckets and went back into, I mean, that's pretty silly to begin with, even if it happened, right? I mean, it's all kind of ridiculous. When you think about it, it's called, not to speak to somebody over, you know, for years because of something like this, is just insane amongst itself. Jim being the trickster, I guess he was considered responsible for it, but actually I was the one that had organized it because I had been paid to do so. But Jim somehow got smack in the middle of it because he had the party before this event over at his apartment there in Fort Lee or Gutenberg, maybe it was by that time. And so people of any nature, pro, con, or indifference, were invited, and I guess Bud considered that his case, and so was not very, did not welcome Jim's attention to the matter.
Well, Jim held a grudge for a very long time, too, though, so, I mean, it was both sides.
My big, of course, incident, UFO-related incident with Jim, which has become of a historic nature, is taking the photograph of this purported man in black outside of Jack Robinson's apartment building in Jersey City. This would have been back around 1967, 68. I can never keep the date in my head. It's written down, of course. There had been some widespread UFO sightings, including, I believe, another incident in another park there in New Jersey where some teenagers had seen some creatures. I don't believe they were little men. Maybe these were taller, hairier beings. And for some reason, the MIB had grown attached to these boys. They seemed to be keeping tabs of them. And Jack Robinson was the main investigator on the case, or one of the main investigators. And he claims that a couple of times his phone was being, the calls were being intercepted, somebody was listening in, some of his files had been messed up and maybe missing or thrown over the apartment, but yet there was no sign of a break-in. And Jack would work over in Manhattan. He would take the PATH train over to the city, And shortly after he'd left Lisa work, his wife, Mary Robinson, a very charming lady, would go do the shopping and the chores. And she claimed that on the way back, she noticed that standing in the doorway of the building right next door was this strange-looking individual dressed all in black, very zombified.
Zombified, yes.
Zombified, yes. And in fact, I think that's what the Men in Black are. They are mind-controlled zombies of these other ultra-terrestrials. I mean, they're actually humans that are doing the work, the dirty deeds for whoever is behind her, the UFO. So Mary would see this figure standing in the doorway and report it to Jack. And I guess after a while they thought it was perhaps getting a little bit menacing, although I don't think there was any overt attempt to silence them or threaten them, or I don't think this person ever moved. Anyway, Jim was very skeptical of the story because Mary was a psychic and fooled around with the Ouija board. She, unlike Jack, who was more nuts and bolts, I think. I mean, he believed in the paranormal nature of this, but he was more scientifically inclined, if we could use that word, while Mary was pretty far out with the psychic and the mediumship stuff, but a very nice lady and believable to some extent. So Jim decided, he and I go over to Jersey City one day without telling the Robinson that we're coming to see if there's actually somebody in the doorway monitoring the activities of somebody coming in and out of the building. So indeed, Jim drove, and we got to the building. There was somebody standing there, recessed into the doorway. Jim handed me the camera. I took one shot at least. I took one of the automobile, and we decided we were going to drive around the block, and then Jim would park or double park or something, a very small street that they lived on, and there were cars double parked there all the time and so forth. And so we moved around the block, and that took maybe about 4 or 5 minutes to circle the block. We came back, and the individual was gone, and the automobile was gone. And this is the last time that the Robinsons ever reported seeing anybody there. So it's kind of like, instead of the Men in Black scaring us, we spooked them, and they never showed up again.
So you spooked the Men in Black. We're about to do the break. In case you're wondering what the sound of dogs barking is like, they're having a debate out there about UFOs or something. I'm not sure. Much more intense in our debate, but we'll do our best to minimize that. I want to thank on this segment Geneva Hagen and Tim Beckley for both joining us. We appreciate everything you've done. We appreciate both of you for being you.
And Jim, rest in peace. God bless you, man.
Been a pleasure.
Geneva, nice to meet you for the first time. And Tim, nice to hear you again after so many years.
With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Whether it's personal mail, whether it's business email, you want reliable, dependable delivery, freedom from spam, freedom from viruses. Well, Polaris Mail offers professional email hosting services for your personal or small business use. Each account uses 25 gigabytes of storage, an easy-to-use webmail interface, and full mobile sync. Sign up today for a 30-day free trial at PolarisMail.com, PolarisMail.com. So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It just stopped responding. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Check it out. iWeb.com. That's iWeb.com.
For all women and men who wish their fingernails were harder, this Christmas, wishes come true. Introducing Nails of Steel, a new revolutionary nail hardener. Nails of Steel puts muscle into your soft nails with a creamy, rich, natural herbal formula that is antifungal, hypoallergenic, and biodegradable. Just massage a drop of Nails of Steel over your natural or polished nails and go. With Nails of Steel, there's virtually no drying time. Within the first week, you'll notice your nails getting stronger to eliminate breaking, chipping, splitting, hangnails, nails, and fungus. Nails of Steel makes a great stocking stuffer for women or men. And right now, get 3 1-ounce bottles for only $74.95. That's about a $5 price break on each bottle. That'll last you for months. Visit nailsofsteel.com. That's nailsofsteel.com. Nails of Steel. It's like a salon in a bottle.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include micro plant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Do you think your home is toxic? According to the Consumer Protection Agency, over 150 chemicals found in the average home are connected to allergies, birth defects, cancer, and psychological disorders. The proven fact is, we live in the most toxic environment in history. Yes, toxins can be killers, but there is something you can do. Detoxify your body with the Ion Cleanse detoxification system from A Major Difference. The Ion Cleanse is made in the USA, carries the best warranty in the industry, and comes with a no-risk, money-back guarantee. We have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and are trusted by thousands of doctors worldwide. Visit IonCleanse.com. That's IonCleanse.com. Or call 877-315-8638. That's 877-315-8638. Invest in your health with the Ion Cleanse from A Major Difference. IonCleanse.com. One of the most important decisions you will ever make.
Hi, this is Nick Pope. You're listening to the Paracast.
So as the debate continues here between nine dogs from our next-door neighbors who are busy debating UFOs and things that go bump in the night, we're debating and we're discussing the life and times of Jim Moseley, one of the unique figures in UFO research. Our complement of people over this show has included Geneva Hagen. She was co-editor of Caveat Emptor. I was the editor. We also had Alan Greenfield and Tim Beckley. Bob Zanotti remains. Jerry Clark remains. I'm going to ask you a question, Jerry. Looking over all the stuff that you've heard about Jim, when you first learned that he was involved in this Straith letter and all the hoaxes, that kind of put you off as to what this guy was?
No, because I don't think I ever had any illusions about Jim. Unlike Alan Greenfield, apparently, I'm not really sentimental about Jim. I liked Jim. He and I were quite close in his last years, and we corresponded the old-fashioned way through the mail because he was not an Internet kind of guy. We actually got pretty close, and I was fond of him, and he confided a bunch of things in me, and he talked about his impending departure from the Earth and his skepticism about life after death. And I always liked Jim. I didn't think that Jim was, he was sort of an unusual guy. He wasn't exactly a remarkable guy. He was just a guy who happened, because of circumstances, to be able to be in place when a lot of interesting things were happening, and not just phenomenologically, but culturally. And he was in the middle of that, and he got to document a lot of it. I don't think that he really understood a lot of what was happening around him, but he was writing it down, and that alone makes him a significant figure.
Jerry, could I just make a point here about this? I remember very early on when I met Augie Roberts, who seemed to have quite a bit of information about Jim. He told me the story that Jim was rather wealthy. He had a trust fund in his name at the something through the Barber Shipping Lines or something. So in other words, Jim was very wealthy, certainly back in those days. And, you know, I don't mean this in an unkind way, but just to make it a bit graphic.
Well, he wasn't wealthy in a Rockefeller sense, but he was pretty well off.
I mean, you know, when you had a few hundred thousand at your disposal back in the 50s and 60s, you were certainly well-to-do, and money was not his problem at the time. I sometimes got the impression of, this sounds pejorative, I do not mean it that way, the poor little rich kid who was looking for kicks. He didn't have to work. he could really, I had a feeling that ufology in some way was a kind of hobby, a diversion, and which maybe accounts for the fact, as some people have observed, he never really took it, sometimes he didn't take it that seriously. At the time, it was a big thing. It was exciting. There were things to do, activities. You could meet people, go around, chase flying saucers, and do some pseudo-research. That's the kind of feeling I had about Jim, based on some of his comments over the period of time. And I think that Gray Barker was a bit like that, too. I think the both of them approached ufology, at least at one point in the early days, very much in that sense. Just something to do, a diversion. You didn't have the internet, you didn't have social networking, so you went out and chased flying saucers. And that was Jim's attitude for much of it. When you start talking about buried treasure or robbing graves in South America, he got extremely serious, and he took this extremely seriously. And, of course, that was very important to him. I think ufology was a diversion more than a passion with him.
I think that I agree with just about everything you say. I think those are all well-taken points. I have written a review, an obituary of Jim for the British magazine 40 Times. And one of the points I make is that because Jim had money, he didn't have to worry about 9-to-5 diversions. So he could basically do whatever he wanted to do or whatever he bopped into. And I think that over time, the UFO social world that he was in, just because he was like a whole lot of other people intrigued by UFO reports, I think that in time that the UFO social world became his social world, that he lived in this world surrounded by familiar people that he liked or disliked, but who really kind of defined his life. And because he had money, although I understand he was running out of money toward the end, but he wasn't distracted by jobs and pedestrian things like that the rest of us have to deal with, so he could do what he wanted to do. And he did some interesting things, and that's why we're talking about it.
Well, one of the things I think we can bear in mind is that over the years, Jim first tried very hard to get control of his money. It was originally set in a trust fund. The money was in the ownership of something called Barber Steamship Lines, which was his late mother's parents who had run that company, I gather. So he had a lot of money in his name. He had a trust fund that he could access with, I guess, monthly paychecks. But his big thing is that he tried to gain control. And when he finally gained control, the problem is, of course, that he kind of frittered the money away in rather bad investments. If he had left well enough alone, he would have been better off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think something that Jerry said a moment ago should be picked up on. I think it's a very important point, actually, and it's really obvious. I think that Jim made a major contribution to ufology, as he did. That's why we're paying homage to him today, because for the very fact that he didn't have to worry about everyday mundane things, going out and having a 9-to-5 job, as you pointed out, Jerry. And I think this allowed him the freedom to do basically what he wanted. I mean, you had to be, even today, I suppose, up to a point, unless you industrialize ufology, and some people have. In those days, I mean, you had to be very dedicated, and you had to have some means to go around to follow up all these stories, and he did it very well. But I think had he had a 9-to-5 job, that would not have been possible. And we can debate his real personal interest in ufology, his beliefs about it, but I think it was just, I say again, and I think you and I both agree, I don't know where Gene stands on it, but it seems to have been a hobby, a diversion. It was fun. It got big. He made a name. And I remember him making references to that. We had a discussion once about why he liked to go on the radio. He says, well, I like people to hear me on the radio. And Ray Barker said very much the same thing.
Sorry about the dogs, ladies and gentlemen. They're still having that debate over things that go bump in the night, which is what's upsetting them, and this is the daytime.
Are you calling us dogs, Gene?
No, I'm talking about those things you hear in the background. But just wondering why they're doing that. But seriously speaking here, there was a time, I think, where Jim did regard Saucer News as a 9-to-5 job, although maybe more like a noon to 8 o'clock job, because for the time that I worked as managing editor of Saucer News, I came in there 5 days a week, worked an unusual work day, but still 7-8 hours with a lunch break, And Jim was there for most of the time unless he was doing something that required his attention. So for a time, he really ran that as a real product, as a real publication, as a real place of employment for people. Very interesting, despite the fact that he didn't have to do that.
Well, I was surprised to hear how successful he was actually with his publications, because that's amazing. I mean, I had no idea he was that successful.
Well, you see, the big thing about it, though, is that there was a limit to how far he could go, and he saw the limit. You know, maybe he tried to push too fast, too far with the UFO convention in 1967. That was the beginning of the end of Saucer News. It was maybe a year or two later, I believe, that he sold the publication to Gray Barker.
68.
That really exhausted him. He realized that after all that work, getting all those thousands of people to attend this nationally covered UFO convention, he still couldn't show a real profit at the end. And if you're running a business, you expect to at least earn enough money to pay your keep. And he didn't. He barely broke even, or maybe he broke even with a small amount of money. But it became very frustrating. He reached this limit. You can only go so far with UFOs, with saucers, and then you just had to stop.
In 1967 was probably the peak of popular interest in UFOs.
That's right.
So if you couldn't make a bundle then, you weren't going to make a bundle.
That was it. He could see the cyclical nature because he'd been in the UFO field since the early 50s. And he could see at this particular point in time that after you've made all this wonderful effort, I mean, he really did hard work there. This guy was at it 7 days a week to build this convention, to promote it. You had Tim and other people. I had left the New York area at the time. I came in to visit. But the key is here is that after all this effort, reaching the pinnacle of success, such as it is, Saucer News couldn't become something that would exist on the next level and continue to grow. Maybe a newsstand publication or something that would go on year after year. Didn't happen. UFOs were always cyclical. It's like over the years you've seen commercial newsstand publications about UFOs, and they come and they go. Because interest just wanes and increases again where you go. We still have Bob Zanotti and Jerry Clark joining Gene and Chris. Remembrance of Jim Moseley. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you'd like to listen to GCN programs on the go, I have great news. GCN has created a Droid and iPhone application, and it's free. Just as easy as going to GCNlive.com, click on the banner, and download. Before you know it, you'll be listening to your favorite hard-hitting GCN shows, live or on demand, right on your Droid or iPhone, 24/7 and on the go. So download the Droid and iPhone app free by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Thanks again for listening to GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Here it comes, another cold and flu season. Get ready for it and save now during the pre-winter sale at HerbalHealer.com. Don't be without powerful natural flu fighters like elderberry power capsules. They support the immune system and they have antiviral properties. Another powerful antiviral is olive leaf capsules, highly recommended by Herbal Healer Academy. Also on sale is Physician Strength Oregacillin, a savior for the lungs. It fights bacteria, virus, and fungus. Our famous four herb capsules are a gentle liver cleanser and can be taken daily. Also featured this winter are the homeopathic detoxes, liver, kidney, lung, lymph, whole body, and brain detox on sale. And remember, as always, new customers get a free 128-page catalog with your order. Log on and hit the pre-winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.